On number 19, abalone status review and preliminary listing. Briefing and public hearing.
And samples. You guys never bring the little cooler.
I brought the shells last time. You guys didn't seem satisfied with the shells. I don't know why.
There's some enforcement in the room.
Anybody up here appears to be sleeping. It's not because of you. It's just been a long day, so we're all right.
Well, thanks for having us. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, Mr. Director, and Mr. Deputy Director. I'm Chris Early. I'm a policy coordinator with the Puget Sound Shellfish Unit, and this is Dr. Hank Carson. He's our research scientist. So we were here in December and presented to you the potential state endangered species listing for a native abalone, and today we'd like to give you an update on that.
Thanks, Chris, and thank you all. Should be brief here today in terms of my presentation, probably about five slides, but here's the outline. Just brief one-slide background of what we covered in December to reorient you to the topic. Then we'll go to talk about how we conducted our outreach and what the results of that public outreach and comment, and talk a little bit about the peer review of our preliminary status report. Finally, into a timeline of the next steps in this process, and then open it for questions and any public comment that we have. So, in December, we talked about the pinto abalone. It's an iconic native mollusk, basically a snail. It's been valued for centuries as food and also for their beautiful shells. And I know the commissioners, some of you enjoy them as food as well. Unfortunately, declines in the population led to a fishery closure in 1994. They've been listed as endangered in Canada. And they've been on the NOAA Species of Concern list for some time, although they were not federally listed, as we discussed last time. Our decline in our state is estimated at 97% from index stations over the period of 92 to through 2017. And we think the most likely cause of that decline is just low adult densities. These are spawning individuals. They need to be in a high density in order for fertilization to occur. So when you bring those populations down to a low density, it's really difficult for reproduction. So we think we have a reproductive collapse and an aging population. So we haven't seen juveniles in our surveys for a long time. The good news is we have a hatchery program. It's been very successful. We've put over 16,000 juveniles out, and now we have a handful of adult spawning aggregations that we've created in the San Juan Islands. But it is limited in scope. It's a pilot scale project, and to achieve real recovery, that would have to be scaled up. So in terms of this process, we initiated a status review in October of 2018, and as I said, we presented the briefing to you in December. In terms of the public comment period, we opened that in October 2018, and that will extend through today's hearing. We released a preliminary status review in December and also presented that to you all in December at the commission meeting. We have not been passive at all in trying to get public comment on that review and in general on our preliminary listing recommendation, which was to list as endangered. And we've reached out to pretty much everyone we could think of, treaty tribes, diving community, conservation groups, commercial fishers, aquaria, to try to get some public comment. And we've also gone out and given 8 presentations all around the sound to anyone that would have me talk about abalone and solicit public comment. That has resulted in a lot of great letters, 28 comments in support. And that includes some letters from a lot of different organizations, including some nonprofits, and also from 3 different counties, the Marine Resources Committee of Skagit County, and then the county commissioners of both San Juan and Island counties. Again, writing in support, recognizing the importance of the species to their constituents. As required, we also selected 3 reviewers to send our preliminary status report to get a scientific peer review. Those 3 are listed here. We selected Melissa Newman, who led the federal status review for this species in 2014 and also is active in abalone restoration of a number of species in California. Mike Dunellen is an abalone scientist from Alaska Fish and Game, and then Carolyn Wells is with DFO in Canada and also is in charge of their Pinto abalone endangered listing. We have received the review from two of those. We're actually still waiting on Melissa's. She was backed up from the government shutdown, but we expect it in the next couple of days. So I'm kind of would like to get her comments just because she led the federal review. Hopefully in the next few days and incorporating any public comment received today, we can incorporate all that into the final recommendation, which at this point have every indication will remain a recommendation of listing as endangered. So that's pretty much the timeline here. We'll be again modifying that preliminary with the results of the review and the comment and any comment we received today, of course. And then hopefully turning around in the next week or two and presenting the final review to you. And that also has a 30-day public comment period on it as well. And then pending any comments on that, we would be bringing you a recommendation for a decision targeting that May 31st call might work out. And with that, I'll take your questions to start.
Any questions? No questions. We do have one individual that would like to make public comment. Sophia Ressler.
Thank you both for your work on this, and commissioners, thank you all for being here and for your work and putting all of this into this long day. So I think that a lot of what I was going to say it was already covered. My name is Sophia Ressler. I am the Washington Wildlife Advocate and a staff attorney for the Center for Biological Diversity, which is a national nonprofit that focuses on endangered species and wildlife preservation in both the United States and abroad. We are here to support the department's finding that this species should be listed. I will just touch on a few main reasons for their decline and why we think that this is so important that the Pinto abalone gets listing status. First of all, poaching still remains one of the primary threats to this species. They command high prices on the black market. I think that it sounds like all of you have seen their shells, so they're very beautiful. It's challenging to apprehend poachers due to the inaccessible nature of the abalone's habitat. And these are the most valuable abalone, so they're the most sought after. There are also one of the main things that I want to bring to your attention is that environmental changes have been a really big impact on this species. Ocean acidification hampers the abalone's growth and hinders its ability to produce a thick protective shell. And it impairs its ability to avoid predators. They also have issues with low oxygen levels and warmer ocean temperatures. So these ecosystem changes are going to be compounded by other environmental stressors such as sea level rise, changes in upwelling regimes, salinity, increased frequency and intensity of storm events, as well as natural sources of mortality, including predation, parasites, and diseases. So we just wanted to be here today to give our support to listing this species as endangered. It's our only abalone species known to occur in Washington state waters. It fulfills a unique ecosystem role. It helps to regulate and maintain healthy benthic communities, rocky reefs, and kelp forests. Despite its ecological importance, the species is considered functionally extinct in Washington, and numbers continue to decline in state waters despite recovery efforts. And listing the Pinto abalone by the state of Washington would require the state to do such things as develop a recovery plan for the species that includes target population objectives and mandate a status review at least every 5 years. So the center is very much in support of Washington's efforts to further protect and recover the Pinto abalone by listing it as an endangered species. Thank you very much for your
time. Thank you very much. Any questions from the commission? Hearing none, thank you very much for coming.
I have one of the team.
Chair Smith, excuse me. Commissioner Smith now.
Is there hope?
I mean, I've seen what's happened in Sitka area, the rebounding of the population, but is there hope here?
I'm really pleased with the success of the restoration outplants. Like I said, we've created probably 8 beautiful, adult, very dense, you know, aggregations artificially. We don't know exactly how many offspring they reproduce because we can't always be there when they're spawning. But I think that's a great sign. Those things are persisting. I mean, we've had these. We started in 2009, so I think they're there to stay if properly protected. I think it is going to take some more investment because to actually get a lot more of those to actually see a population scale recovery. But for now, we're still able to find broodstock. Local broodstock to use in our hatchery. We are maybe going to explore looking out of state if that becomes a problem. But I think we're at a crossroads, and I think there's still some time we have to bring them back from the edge of the cliff.
Keep up the work. Good work.
Just a quick question about your successfully getting a juvenile population. How long does it take a juvenile to get to broodstock age?
They're reproductive actually pretty soon from settlement, so even before juvenile, probably can get to reproductive age in 4 or 5 years. But growth rate's really variable. So we see some that we put out that are surviving 4 or 5 years and almost not growing at all and are probably not reproductive. But I think on average you're looking at 4 or 5 years.
Mr. Thorburn?
The public testimony brought up, and you emphasized it in your initial presentation to us in December, the role of poaching and the population decline. And I can't remember whether this was presented. How will the status change, the recommended status change, affect? Does it increase penalties? How will that affect that risk to this population?
It will affect the penalties, and that's perhaps a good reason to pursue this. Currently, it's basically if you took an abalone and were caught, you'd be caught fishing in a closed season, even though the season has been closed since 1994, and that's a misdemeanor. Now you would be under a different WAC and RCW, and you'd be taking an endangered species. That would increase on your first penalty a gross misdemeanor, increases the fines and potential jail time. And then a second offense actually becomes a Class C felony on the endangered, I think a second offense within 5 years. So there's those. And I also think there'd be some benefit because obviously there's not enough to have a commercial scale poaching operation right now. But we do still hear, you know, rumors, secondhand, loose talk around the dive shop about people bragging about taking one or two as they, you know, as they find them recreationally diving. And I think just having the stigma first, you're not just, oh, you know, I know they're in trouble, but I'll just take one, it won't matter, to now you're taking an endangered species. I think the simplicity of that is helpful. And then I think we'll, if adopted, we'd pair that with some more outreach to go to these dive shops and maybe get some signage and say, hey, this is, you know, this is an endangered species. Maybe if we could work the word felony in there somewhere, I think that could have a chilling effect on people, if to whatever extent there is some low-level poaching going on right now.
Commissioner Hosemiller.
Scary, isn't it?
A little bit, but
I guess I'm going to ask my fellow commissioner, Mr. Smith. You said that they're rebounding in Alaska, but that's after they had a little seal control?
Yeah, well,
otter.
Yeah,
or otter.
That's my friend up there who's a native and the Marine Mammal Commission, but you're probably familiar with that. They removed a lot of otters in that area.
And one of our reviewers, Mike Dinellan, is from Alaska, and I've spoken with him about their populations. They are finding some persistence of the abalone populations where otters are inhabiting, which is surprising because we know that otters do prefer prefer abalone a lot of places. I don't know if that will persist, but
I don't want to be held to the number, but when I was there, I think he said in the greater Sitka area, and I don't know exactly what that was, but it was 2,000 that they took otters.
But I guess this is a case about like the Columbia River salmon, where you've got pinnipeds eating endangered species, and I mean, truly, guys, if we're going to deal with it, we need to be forthright and candid. that if that's a problem, we may need to try and...
They're not river otters.
These are right. Yeah, but I mean, still, pump a lot of money and a lot of issues into something, and then all we do is make our otters fat, you know?
Yeah, at this time, their populations, we don't think there ever was a population of abalone on the outer coast where most of the otters are. So right now, the overlap is just a little bit in the Western Strait. If that were to change and otters were to colonize the Puget Sound and San Juan Islands, that would certainly agree. That would be a major concern.
We have little or no otters in this.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know if that was an issue or not.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. If there's no other questions, go about your business, and we'll look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you.